So we're holding Mishle, Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Tezvav, the 17th chapter, the 16th verse. Lama ze mechir biyad kesil liknot chokhmah velev ayin? How come is it you have a fool, he has the money to buy wisdom, but he doesn't have the heart to do it? So this can be understood on many levels. On one level, very often we have the potential to grow, and we don't take advantage of it, just like a person who has the money to buy wisdom and he doesn't. Classically, it could be referred to Machon Meir. People have a situation here where they could take advantage and learn and learn and learn and learn, or any yeshiva, not necessarily Machon Meir. And to an extent, when you're in yeshiva, you're in Gan Eden. You don't have much to worry about. You don't need to have a family to support. You have the potential to grow. You have everything that, basically available. And we don't take advantage of it. Every morning we wake up, we say, God, atachonin ladam das, you give people knowledge. And how much do we take advantage of it? How much do we focus? How much do we get the sleep we need? So,
I have a question about this, because suddenly I realized that I'm not going to be and I felt like, you know, what's next? Sometimes I have no idea what's next. So, can we maybe have a class on what's after Machon?
We had a class 2 months ago, and I'll be happy to do it again. We had a class labeled Life After the Machon.
I'm not sure if it was enough.
I agree. But that, I think, is more for one-on-one. But now we're saying, because ordinarily people after the Machon will not spend all day learning Torah, I they should be able to do it. When people are in a gold mine and they have the ability to take advantage of it, so that's like the fool that has money to buy wisdom, but he doesn't have the heart to do it. So too, a person very often is in situations where he could learn. You're in shul and the rabbi is speaking to you in Mincha Nair. If you're sitting there anyways, you might as well learn. You like him more, you like him less. It's more interesting, less interesting. Bottom line, you're learning. Why not catch what he's saying? I was on a ride yesterday, and a kid sat next to me, and he started telling me Dvar Torah. So a lot of what he said I knew, but not every point. So why not listen? So even if I know what he's saying, so it's a review. I'm talking to him anyways, might as well listen. Might as well gain from it. So he's younger than me, so he's telling me something I learned. So what? I could gain, I could learn. We're very often in situations where we could attain wisdom, and the question is, do we have the heart to do it? Our sages said that this pasuk is referring to people who learn Torah and they don't plan on keeping it. So that's called a fool. He's got the money and he doesn't have the heart. It's all external, and one is supposed to learn Torah and internalize it. Yeah.
Isn't it also, I suppose that you're by listening, he's saying Dvar Torah.
Fine. That too, for sure. Why not? We can always gain. There are Divrei Torah that I quote to this day, that I got from a kid that I gave a ride to when I used to live in the United States. I had a car, so there you can't get around without a car, at least in the country where my parents lived. So I'd always give people rides. See someone walking the direction you're driving, might as well give them a ride. Why not? And after they'd sit down, I tell them, I forgot to tell you, there's a fee. And the guy was like, huh? So yeah, you have to say Dvar Torah. Very often the younger people say, I don't have Dvar Torah. I say, and I tell them, you don't have to tell me a chiddush. You tell me a pasuk, for me that's enough. You tell me a mishnah, you learned a mishnah. That's also Dvar Torah. Why should we drive and not have Dvar Torah? And very often I give right to chassidim. And that's why I learned a lot of the chassidish Torah I know. They'd always quote their rebbe. So you learn nice stuff from their rebbe too. So what do I care? We're driving, we're going down the road. Why shouldn't we learn something? You gain. You could always gain. A person has to have the heart to want to, but the opportunities are there, especially today. The pasuk says, a person that always loves friends, so he acquires a brother for situations of danger. And this teaches us how a friend is supposed to behave. A person is supposed to always want friendship. We all have situations where sometimes we have more patience, sometimes we have less patience. There are situations where we feel like being with someone else. There are situations where we want to be with ourselves. But we have to recognize that our attitude has to primarily be an attitude that we want friendship, that we want to connect with other people. And if that's what we convey, So then we'll acquire friends that will be like brothers. And when a person is in a situation where he has a tzara, he is in need of other people, he'll have those other people. If he conveyed to other people that he's only their friend when it's convenient for him, so then they'll also only be his friend when it's convenient to them. Like we saw, kamayim panim lapanim. People relate to other people the way they relate to them. And the pasuk is guiding us that we have to be there for people always. That's our responsibility. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Bechol et ohev areah. And our sages said that a person who personified this pasuk is Yisro. That he stood by Moshe's side whenever Moshe needed him. And his family was with the Jewish people whenever they needed them. When we were, when Moshe was out stuck in Midian, so he helped him out. When the Jewish people were traveling through the desert, he helped them out. When the Jews were in the land of Israel and they were fighting a war and his offsprings were in danger of getting harmed, so then he got payback. And then they told him, hey, be careful, there's going to be a war next to you. Watch out, we don't want you guys to get hurt. Adam chasar lev, a person that's missing his heart, missing the intellectual thought, tokakaf. So he quickly goes into deals with people, deals where he is a co-signer, where he's responsible for the expenses. Orev aruba lifnei re'u. And he is willing to take responsibility for loans before his friends. And this is considered one who isn't thinking properly. Very often people enter into all kinds of business transactions. And they think, oh, I can make a lot of money. Whenever we enter into a deal, we think we're going to make money. The question is, how much liability is there? And in Mishlei, time and again, Shlomo HaMelech warns us, don't enter situations of liability. Don't co-sign. You never know when it will come back to haunt you. My uncle is a businessman, and he said that the rule in business is the best, a deal is judged by how easily you can get out of it. The best deal is one you can get out of easily. That's a good deal. You never know whether it's going to be lucrative or not. And every deal you think it's going to be lucrative, that's why you enter it. But you never know what the outcome is going to be and what's going to affect the deal in the long run. So the pasuk tells us, you want to be a dumb person, you want to be a person that isn't thinking well, so just enter deals where you have liability. Adam chasar lev, a person who's lacking in the heart, he's lacking thought, tokakav, he quickly makes a deal. Orev aruba lifnei re'u, is willing to enter situations of liability before his friend. And even if it's a friend, our sages said that the pasuk is alluding to situations where people enter deals that are halachically forbidden. They enter deals with Rishayim. And they forget that they've already co-signed to the Ribon Shalom. We've already taken the responsibility to follow the ways of the Torah. When it comes to business, the people they enter all kinds of deals, transactions, irrespective of whether they are within the laws of the Torah. Pasuk Yotes, Ohev Pesha, Ohev Matzah. Magbia Pitcho Mevakesh Shaver. People who like being distrustful to their friends, there are people who like fights. Part of friendship is that we rely on one another, that we're going to maintain the faith. If I tell you what's going on by me, you're not going to go tell everyone else. And when a person shows that he likes being unfaithful to his friends, he's really showing that he also likes fights, because that's what's going to breed. Magbea pitcho, if a person raises his doorway, so to speak, he speaks proudly, mevakesh shaver, he's inviting really situations of breaches of trust, situations of destruction. People think, if I make my door wide, I show I'm big, I'm big-hearted, I could speak proudly, so that'll gain me advancement in life. And our sages taught us, you speak proudly, that'll gain you situations of destruction, situations where one does not advance, but rather one falls. Ikesh lev, one who's of a stubborn heart. Lo yimtza tov, he won't find good. So the pasuk is warning us against being stubborn. It's interesting. There was a girl who called me a few months ago. She wanted the shidduch. She wanted me to set her up. And in the conversation, I could tell she was very, very stubborn. and I couldn't think, who could I set her up with? Like the girls, I could see she's stubborn. I mean, that's a real problem in married life. And yesterday I was at a wedding where I knew she was present. So I said, you know what? Maybe I didn't understand her correctly. I'll try to talk to her face to face for a few minutes, which I rarely do. Almost all the girls I set up, almost all the shidduchim we made, I didn't see the girl face to face ever until they were engaged and they came over to tell us they were engaged. So almost every shidduch we set up, I didn't meet them in person. But here I said, you know what? Maybe if I see her face to face, I'll see I was wrong. Maybe I could set her up with someone. So I asked someone there at the simcha to show me the girl, and I didn't have to walk over to the table. I could see the heated conversation, and you could see it like from a distance that here's an action talking. That was I said, "Uh-oh, I was right. What am I going to do?" And I got phone calls like before the wedding. People told me she's going to be there, and no one sets her up. And you know what? I know why. I feel bad for the girl, but I know why no one sets her up. So I was asking myself, maybe that could work. Maybe I could set her up with someone who's like her. So I don't know. I'm working on it, but it's hard. The pasuk says, "Ikesh lev," a person who's of a stubborn heart, "lo yimtza tov," he won't find good. So I thought, like, this pasuk is referring to tov is marriage. A person who's of a stubborn heart is going to have a hard time finding marriage. Okay, but that's an illusion. That's my pshat. Pashup pshat in the pasuk is that when a person is of ikesh lev, doesn't only mean stubborn. Ikesh could also mean twisted. If a person's heart goes in a twisted fashion and he isn't straight with the way he runs his life, so he won't find good ultimately. And one who speaks in twisted ways will ultimately fall in bad ways. I also see this in Shidduchim. People sometimes call, and you could see the person seems to be a compulsive liar. Within the same conversation, he could describe his past in four different ways. And he doesn't realize, like, I'm typing. I'm like editing, so I have one version, version two, version three, version four. And at the end of the conversation, like, wait a second, didn't you say this, didn't you say that? Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. I once had a guy who was a high school dropout. I don't mind. I don't hold it against him. But during the conversation, he mentioned, like, three different histories of his high school history. And then it turned out he was a high school dropout, and he made up the other stuff. He never really graduated high school, which I don't mind. I mean, then there are girls that won't mind. But if he's going to twist the story in different ways, so it's very difficult. Like afterwards, like, what do you do with a guy like that? I don't know. So the pasuk warns us, a person who twists the way he speaks, ultimately it causes his downfall. It's the person's own detriment. Yoled kesi letuga lo velo yismach avi navan. The pasuk refers to a ksil, a fool, and what the fruit that a fool bears is ultimately something that's saddening even to himself. The fruit he keeps reaping the fruits of his actions, and he's upset by it. Velo yismach avi naval, and the father of a derelict isn't happy. If a person has a son who's stupid, so he's not going to have a lot of nachas from it. So again, on a simple level, pasuk is referring simply. You want to succeed, then there has to be some logic behind what a person's doing and the way a person's behaving. Lev sameach yitiv geha. A happy heart makes one's body be well. So the simple understanding here is simply a person feels better. A person feels better physically when his heart is happy. And the pasuk is referring to, on one level, a person's countenance. When a person's happy, so he's got a happy countenance when he's happy inside. Our sages told us that this refers to even a person's shoe size. When a person has something that makes him happy, so his body expands. Suddenly he'll need a larger shoe size. And I'll get to you in just a second. The ruach nicha'a, and a spirit that is broken, tiyabesh garim, dries out one's bones. And you see this. When a person's happy, so you see his whole body, his whole body language seems to spell out a certain openness. And when a person's broken inside, so you see he's going to be more bent over, and his body language is going to spell out, I am sad. Yeah.
You said that being happy just it's better for a person. How do you balance that with, you know, you're supposed to kind of feel some pain for our brothers that are in a lot of trouble, whether it's John Paul or kidnapped soldiers or whatever. How do you balance it?
I think whatever I'm going to tell you now is my opinion. I don't have sources offhand to back what I'm saying. So, but I think that there are a few things to be aware of. It's interesting. Yesterday at the wedding, so someone asked me, someone we knew, a mutual person, and we knew someone who passed away very painful death, and it was hurtful to anyone that knew that person. So this person said, how do you succeed in being happy when you know all the orphans that are left behind and the painful death that this person endured? And I think that the first thing when we discuss sad events and being sad and crying, the first thing we need is to be honest with ourselves. Very often we have an internal sadness and we find ways in which to manifest, in which to express that sadness. And when something sad happens, it's not that we feel sad for what happened, but rather that sadness resonates within us and we find a channel, we find a place to channel our sadness and to express our sadness. And very often when a person's crying, and even if he's crying at a funeral or he's crying at bad news that he's heard, very often he's not really crying about anyone but himself. So the first thing when we discuss sadness, we have to first be honest with ourselves and recognize, where is the sadness stemming from? Is it that a person himself feels dejected, feels upset with himself, feels like, I'm not living up to who I want to be, and therefore there's a perpetual sadness within a person, which is the way I think most people live? And when a person cries even about something external and even about something that a person should care about, very often I think what a person is really crying about, I think most of us, we're crying as a form of expressing our own inner sadness, something that has nothing to do with the external world. So that's a problem. And that's something which I think we have to deal with. And that stems from our inner complications. Very often it stems from a Yetzer Hara to try and overachieve, where a person thinks that he has potential that's much greater than it really is, and a person is upset with himself for not achieving a potential which he is not yet ready to achieve. We spend our days, ending a day, being upset with ourselves and saying, I wish I would have done A, B, and C. And even if we don't spell it out, we very often will have inner sadness because we feel like we aren't who we'd like to be. And we forget that that's Yetzer Hara. A person is supposed to partition an amount of time in which he stops and thinks and is sad over what he isn't, and then figures out a way of becoming what he would like to be, and then works at it positively. The problem is that we don't do that. We end our days and say, oh, another day when I didn't wake up on time. Another day when I didn't learn the way I want to. Another day when I didn't get where I wanted to be. And even if we don't spell it out to ourselves, we spend our lives that way. And it can be on many fronts. I'm describing spiritual fronts. It can be on more mundane fronts. And then a person lives with inner sadness. And that inner sadness stems from his own discontentment with life. And that's something which a person has to work out. And then if a person has reached a level where internally he's content, not content that he doesn't feel like he has to strive and move forward, but rather he's content because he recognizes that life is an ongoing challenge, and some days he's going to win more, and some days he's going to win even more, and he's going to constantly work on growing, and he's happy because that's what he's doing. And even though he's not winning every battle, but all in all he's moving forward, and he recognizes the value of the positive actions which he's doing and the value of the advancements that he's made, not only the value of where he'd like to be and where he isn't. Once a person can attain that, then he's at a level where we can discuss, okay, now how do we balance this inner happiness that Shlomo HaMelech is talking about and the sadness which a person is supposed to feel for sad things that happen. So that was all an introduction. Now to address your question. After that introduction, which again I say to myself every day, and I said to this person yesterday, and I think it's applicable to every person I know. I think it's applicable to all of us. Like I told him, I think that most people live in a state where they're tired of life. And to an extent, if a person would drop dead, a person feels like, I'm tired. Okay, it's over, so the fight is over. And it's not the way we're supposed to live. We're supposed to live with a zest for life. One of the things we're supposed to value most is life. We're supposed to be happy about what we're doing here. We're supposed to value, hey, God put me here. I have a purpose. No one else can fill my purpose. Now, there's a beautiful movie called It's a Wonderful Life, in which a person is shown how the world would look without him. So I don't encourage people to see movies, but I think the concept is an important concept. Very often, what? Am I quoting it if I didn't see it? When I was a kid, I grew up with a TV at home. I didn't grow up without a TV. And it wasn't off all day. I used to be normal. I'd like to think. No, I don't have a TV now.
In that case, I used to be very, very normal. I used to be crazy.
We all flipped out together.
No, I don't think that's true. No, I'm sorry. No. I don't think it's true. I don't think we flipped out. I think the world's flipped out. But, so now, as far as balancing the happiness and the sadness, so we have the pasuk in Koheles. Lakol zaman ve'et lechol chefetz tachta shamayim. There's a time for everything. There's a period for everything. Et lismoach. There's a time to be happy, and there's a time also for sadness. Now, when there are situations which continue, like Jonathan Pollard is in jail, and we have soldiers that are in captivity, we're supposed to feel for them. We're supposed to feel for them when we daven. We're supposed to feel for them when we think about them. And that doesn't mean that we're supposed to stop our lives and say, okay, now I'm never going to be happy again. I'm not going to dance at a wedding. I'm not going to be happy. So there are levels of happiness. There's something called compartmentalizing, which is important in life. When they build a submarine, so the submarine has many compartments, and that's meant so that if it's hit on one side, the whole submarine can still float, the whole submarine can still exist. So they have special, when they feel like they've been hit or there's a problem with one part of the submarine that too much water has entered it, so they push a button and right away all the compartments seal off. And you have many different compartments in the submarine. You can't go from one to the other. It all locks off. And that's to ensure that submarine can continue to exist with all men on board. By the same token, a person in life has to be able to compartmentalize. There's a compartment which feels sadness, and there's the compartment that feels happiness. And there are times when we let this come to play, and there are times when we let that come to play, and there are times when we just carry it with us. So when I was walking down to the chuppah, I wanted, one of the parents didn't want it, but I wanted that before we go continue with the wedding, we'd say Perek Tehillim. In my time, there were other soldiers that were in captivity. It wasn't the soldiers that are now, since a year ago. And part of what Chazal taught us is that even at one's happiest moments, he's supposed to remember, we don't have full happiness. Even the happiness we have, it's not that it fills all the compartments. I have compartments of sadness. I can dance at my wedding, but I could also wear ash when I go up to the chuppah. And remember, hey, the temple's destroyed. The Jewish people are not where they should be. There are certain things which I do remember, even at the moments of extreme happiness. I don't attain full happiness because I am attached to fellow Jews, and I am attached to the Creator, and I am attached to where the world and the Jewish people should be. And I am saddened to an extent by what that they aren't, but to an extent. Not to the extent that I can't rejoice, that I can't be happy at a wedding. To the extent that it's not a complete happiness, but it's balanced. Yeah.
Is that healthy to like seal off your emotions?
Depends on what you mean by seal off.
Compartmentalize.
I think it's the only way a person can function. If you let your emotions encompass your life, you can't do anything. You have to be able to function. You have to be able to function.
Right, but if feeling still exists and you seal it off, it seems like something needs to be able to overcome that. Nothing to.
See, I don't think we mean the same thing when we mean seal it off. It sounds like when you say seal it off, you mean like put it 6 feet under and seal it. It exists, but I put it 6 feet under. And what I mean is that it exists in a conscious place where I deal with it, and I'm not sealing it off as in ignoring it. I'm sealing it off as in I'm not letting it overtake my life. We had a rabbi in our community whose son got off a bus here in Israel. They made Aliyah. And as he was crossing the street, the bus driver let him off, not at a bus stop, which bus drivers used to do rampantly, and many people were killed. And that's why, by the way, you shouldn't ask a bus driver to do it, because people do get killed this way. And this rabbi's son, his name was Elazar, he got off the bus, and a van drove by, and the mirror of the van hit the kid on the back of his head and knocked him unconscious. He was brought to the hospital. He was in the hospital alive for about 5 or 7 days and died. And the father was shattered. He came back to the United States. He tried to teach again, and he wasn't able to teach. And then he ended up in his home, spending the rest of his days sitting and crying in a different world, in utter total sorrow. He was just finished. He was. I don't know if he was finished only from the death of his son, or also from the fact that he could no longer go back to teaching. That it reached a rabbinic court that they told him, look, it's not right. You can't. You don't have the emotional strength to stand before a class and teach. And that crushed him also. That also destroyed him. And that's an example of a person who was not able to compartmentalize. The sorrow overtook his life. He sat at home all day, and ultimately he died. And he brought down his whole family with him. I don't hold it against him. You can't judge a person. I have no idea what that kind of sorrow means. But I know on a intellectual level that in order for a person to succeed in life, then a person has to be able to stand in the most difficult situations and function. Look, life is filled with challenges, and a person doesn't always have the time to regain composure. But a person has to function. A person lost a relative in a car accident. Now, they're about to go to burial, and he gets a phone call. Maybe you could donate an organ to save a life. So a person could say, I'm finished, what do you mean? This is a relative just passed away, I can't handle this, don't talk to me now. Things that happen. I was present once when a person donated an organ from a person that passed away. And halachically, so there are issues. When is a person called dead? The whole question of is brain death death or not? We don't know if brain death is death, so that limits what one can donate. But let's say one wants to donate the kelnit, the part of the eye which at 10 hours after a person's dead you could donate it. Heart valves. After a person's dead, 24 hours after a person's dead, within the first 24 hours you could donate. There's no halachic question about that. Those are things which there are things which one can donate. Skin. After a person is completely dead, you could donate skin. And that's a question of pikuach nefesh. Sometimes if a person, over a certain percentage of a person's body was burnt, the person cannot continue to live unless he gets skin from someone. So donating skin is pikuach nefesh. So again, I'm not coming to give halachic ruling about what to do with donations of body limbs. Before you sign any card, speak to your rabbi and find out what you can and cannot do. And you should always have a rabbi that must be consulted before you donate something. But I was once in a hospital, and they started taking limbs from a dead body. And I was there, I was responsible for that body.
You
So I asked them, there's no consent form. I didn't see anything signed. How could you do it? They were allowed to do it. I was there to sign the form. I was sent by the rabbis to sign the form for a certain person, where everything was done according to the rabbi's guidance, meaning the rabbis gave exact guidance how it should be done, and I was there like to oversee it. That was my job there. They told me most people cannot function when this happens to them. So the law in Israel is that you don't have to sign a consent form, being that they gave us the directions, and the rabbis, these were big Haredi rabbis, the rabbis involved said that according to the following guidelines, it may be done in this specific scenario, in a specific case, how and when it should be done. So we have the guidelines, and we don't need anything written and signed, because most people cannot sign it. And I was very saddened to hear that, because you know what that means. That means that people are overtaken with grief, and if people didn't set it up in advance, so then lives are spilled. Donating limbs is a question of life and death. I mean, there are many people on waiting lists who die because they don't get the limbs they need, be it a liver, be it a kidney. So those are problematic. How do you donate that before the person's dead? That's a problem. But that's why it is important to be able to compartmentalize. It's important.
Why haven't you signed?
They said we don't need a signature. That's the law in Israel. You don't need a signature.
But being why hadn't he signed the person?
I know. That was a situation where it was said. Everything was set up in advance.
Oh.
Everything was set up orally.
Oh.
So I thought you're going to need to sign something. That's the way it is in the United States.
Oh.
And here, suddenly they tell me no. And I'm like, okay, so really you could have done anything. So it's really good that I'm here. Hmm. Okay. Back to Mishlei. So by compartmentalize, I don't mean that it doesn't exist and that we don't address it. I just mean that sometimes you have to be able to deal. You can't just say, oh, this is a terrible situation, and let the grief overtake you. You can't. And sometimes it's a question of someone else's life, being able to deal. Now this pasuk, Lev Samech Yetiv Geha, our sages said, means that a person's body expands when he's happy. When Neron was given the message that he would be the next emperor, and Rav Yochanan had just told him, you're going to be the emperor, so he gave Rav Yochanan the prize. He told him, give me your three wishes, I'll give you whatever you want. And Rav Yochanan said, Yavne Bechachamea, a doctor for the Rav, what's his name? Rav, I forgot his name, who was fasting. And so he asked his three wishes, and then Neron couldn't take off his sandal. His foot had expanded from happiness, and he couldn't take his shoe off. And everyone tried to give him advice, nothing worked. So he called Rav Yochanan and he said, hey, you're so smart, tell me, what do I do? So Rav Yochanan told him, oh, that's this pasuk, that when a person is happy, so his body expands, it makes his bones better. So Neron told him, okay, so what's your advice? What do I do? So he said, you know, if there's someone who you really don't like, have him come in and walk in front of you. And when you see that person that you can't stand, so that'll make you sad. That'll get you upset. That'll take away from your happiness. And then your body will come back to its regular size. And that's the end of the pasuk. Ruach nechatia besh garen. Shochad mechek rasha ikach. A bribe given from the thigh, meaning shot from the hip, a wicked person is willing to take it. Le'atot ochot mishpat, to change the ways of justice. If a person is wicked, he's willing to take even a bribe that's given on the spur of the moment, just off the cuff, because he's not interested in justice. Our sages said that this pasuk is supposed to be read a little bit differently. Shochad mechek rasha, a bribe from the hip of the rasha, yikach, Hashem is willing to take. But this pasuk is referring to a person who's a rasha. He spends his life doing things that are wrong, and then at some point he wants to repent and he's embarrassed. Everyone else is going to see me suddenly changing my ways. So he doesn't overtly change his ways. Out in public, he doesn't do anything that anyone could tell. He's not doing bad, but he doesn't overtly show he wants to be tzaddik. But at home, he starts crying and begging Hashem, he wants to do tshuva. So the pasuk says, Shochad, a bribe, so to speak, mechek rasha from the thigh of the rasha. He does it in private, in a way that no one could see. Yikach, Hashem is willing to take it. Hashem says, even if in hiding he wants to do tshuva, so I'll accept that tshuva too. Obviously, that's assuming that in public he isn't a rasha. But even if in public he doesn't show everyone that he's doing tshuva, he maintains a low profile. He doesn't want people to see. He's embarrassed. So, but in private he does do tshuva. Hashem says, I'll take that too. And then I'm willing to change the way of my judging this person. And this shows us how patient God is. God doesn't say you have to do complete tshuva right away. If the first tshuva a person could do is in private, in a way that no one sees, God says, I'll take that too. Do tshuva. God's encouraging us to go the right way. And that also in our parsha we saw, even if the Jewish people do tshuva because it's just so bad, they're in exile and they're suffering, God says you do tshuva even just because you're hurting, not because you really became a tzaddik suddenly, but because it hurts, so you might as well do tshuva. I'll take that too. Et pinei mevin chokhma. The one who has understanding, so he has wisdom. Veinei chasil b'kzei aretz. And the fool, he doesn't have wisdom. He's always looking to the end of the land. And this pasuk, on the simple level, means when a fool starts any adventure, anything that he's going to do, he always looks at the end and he says, whoa, it's going to take so long to get there, how could I ever make it? And our sages said that this pasuk is speaking about when a person comes to learn Torah. You come into yeshiva and you say, there's so much to learn, I'm never going to get all this done. Maseches Shabbos has 24 chapters, never going to finish 24 chapters, can't do that. You open up Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra, 30 chapters, how could I ever finish these 30 chapters? You open Maseches Kelim, 30 chapters about dishes I don't begin to understand. How could I ever finish that? And the smart person, he says, wait a second, how did everyone before me do it? No one learned 24 chapters in a day. No one learned 30 chapters in a day. Everyone started out by learning one Mishnah and another Mishnah and one Perek and another Perek, and that's how they got the 24 chapters. So I'll do it like everyone else did it. The fool, Einei Kesil, the fool looks b'ktzeiaretz, to the edge of the land. He looks to the distance and says, boy, there's so much ground to cover, how am I ever going to make it? And the smart man says, well, one step at a time. It's, the wise man has wisdom by him. Confucius said it, but he didn't know that Shlomo HaMelech preceded him. Confucius said, the greatest journey began with one footstep. You don't look at the end of the journey. You say, wait a second, how did everyone else get there? By climbing slowly, so that's how I'll make it. So we'll pause here.